I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. It's that time of year again when Maryland public, private, and parochial students take their seats for a new school year. Today on the show, we meet six teachers from across the state, including a Baltimore County English teacher who became the 2014 National Teacher of the Year, a Howard County Social Studies teacher who was named Maryland Teacher of the Year, and an urban designer turned teacher at a vocational high school in Baltimore City. Teachers from Washington and Carroll counties are among our guests, too. We'll find out what brought them to the profession and hear about the creative ways they engage their students, as well as their biggest challenges and frustrations. 2 hours, six teachers, the midday back-to-school special, after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us, making Midday part of your day. From planning classes to grading papers and writing letters of recommendation, planning field trips, meeting with parents, teachers have all sorts of responsibilities, and teaching is widely regarded as one of the toughest professions. Maryland evidently has some great public school teachers. From 2009 to 2013, Education Weekly ranked Maryland's public school system as number one in the country. Last year, Maryland was ranked a respectable third overall and second in student achievement. And the system serves a huge number of children. The Maryland State Department of Education is predicting that total public school enrollment this year will exceed 865,000 students. We know that teachers face lots of pressure, and we're going to be hearing about that during this hour of the show because we're going to devote both hours of midday today to conversations with teachers. A two-hour special, a back-to-school special. We'll meet six teachers, as I say. We'll meet two Maryland Teachers of the Year, including one who went on to become the National Teacher of the Year, a distinction that included a ceremony with President Obama at the White House. We'll also hear from an urban designer turned teacher and from a second-grade teacher who uses wetlands to teach her students everything from math and science to civics. So a lot ahead for you in this hour and next. We start things off with Sean McComb. Sean teaches English at Patapsco High School and Center for the Arts in Dundalk in Baltimore County. He's the National Teacher of the Year. He 2014, he gets to go to the White House with his baby, Silas, and his wife, Sarah, and there he is in the blue room with President Obama. If you want to see a picture of Sean McComb in this moment. Hello, Sean. Nice to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, this photograph, we were talking about it before we got on the air a little bit. This is a peak experience for little Silas, who was how old at that moment?
He's 2 months old.
2 months old. So you got the word that you were National Teacher of the Year was when Silas had just been born, right?
Right. It was our fourth day home from the hospital. We are new parents. We get the phone call from Dr. Lowry at MSD saying that I had been selected, and I think my wife had no idea what she was agreeing to when we said we'd like to go forward. Yeah, it was a huge honor.
Wow, and what a thrill. So our listeners might want to know, well, how did you get this distinction? You were teaching English at Patapsco in Baltimore County and working on the AVID program. So we have to tell folks what AVID is and your role in that.
Sure. So AVID is a college preparatory program that exists across the country. It stands for Advancement Via Individual Determination. And my role at Patapsco was to build the program into our culture. The program works where students come in as ninth graders into the program, and a teacher has them in a course as part of their daily schedule that is meant to help make them successful in all their other courses and eventually fulfill their dream of going on to a four-year college.
All right. Well, these are kids who might not be thinking about college, right?
Well, they're thinking about college, but they're not your typical college-going student based on their achievement or they're from underrepresented backgrounds or lower socioeconomics.
Okay. I get it. So they may be thinking, I'd like to go to college someday, but they're not on that track necessarily.
Right, or almost always first generation. Right. So not sure how to make it happen. So the teacher's role is to loop with those students for 4 years in this support class to get them tutorials based on subjects. They go back to physics and they can do the work there to help them understand the college process and to build their skills. But so much of it is also just emotional support and mentoring. It's been really rewarding.
Did you volunteer for that?
I did. At the end of my first year, my principal at the time came and asked if I would be willing to take on that role. And it's a huge undertaking because the students can opt out. So they're not compelled to be there. It's not compulsory. The learning has to be compelling. They choose to stay. And so it really made me as a new teacher think about, you know, what happens here needs to be so valuable to them and so immediately fulfilling and supportive that they keep coming back for more. So that was a great challenge to have early on.
And you got some good results.
We have. So certainly not by myself. My wife has been a huge part of the program, also a teacher at Patapsco, and a whole team of teachers. And over the last 4 years, 98% of students who've graduated from the program have been accepted into a four-year college. So we're really proud of the kids' work.
What were those can you talk about, I know I'm asking you to speak in generalities here, but maybe you could be specific a little bit just to give us an idea what the lives of those kids are like. What did you encounter when you started hearing their personal stories?
Sure. So, you know, like many communities, Dundalk has seen some tougher times. In the time that I've been there, the poverty rate has doubled in our school particularly. So with my last graduating class, I was reading their college essays one evening at home at the dining room table. There's some typical things, a grandparent, a service trip that was important, and then a series of seven essays in a row just kind of was like a punch in the gut. Kids writing about seeing a parent face substance abuse addiction, two kids being evicted from their homes, one that was on his 13th birthday, the last day he's seen his father. Another student wrote about a police raiding the home. One young lady in particular who I worked with closely, she wrote about what it was like to be a teen mother herself, to be abused in her home and then kicked out, and to live homeless for a period of weeks trying to think about where she was going to lay her head at night and where she was going to, how she's going to care for her daughter. And all of those kids who wrote those essays, you know, through support of other family members, peers, and teachers at our school, they were all accepted and went to a four-year college this past year. So that kind of rewarding work with kids that put in such effort to overcome those kind of challenges, to be a part of that process has been incredibly rewarding and some of the most meaningful work I can imagine. And it's been a huge success.
How much time did you devote to AVID? I mean, you were also teaching English, right?
Correct. So I was usually about half and half between my time at school. But I like to make the joke now as a new parent that my wife and I used to consider grading on the couch near each other quality time. you know, two teachers, you take a lot of work home.
That's right. Sarah is your wife?
Correct.
She's a teacher, too.
Yeah. So she and I have looped through five of the six graduating classes from the AVID program at Patapsco. So we've really built this together. It's been a co-mission in life. And because we're both so involved in it, you know, and this involves things outside of school, taking kids to feed the homeless and the needy in the community, we've been able to do it together. And that's been great, but it's also been really time consuming.
Are you still part of the AVID team at Patapsco?
I am. So
that goes on.
So being away for a year past the torch of leadership and another teacher at my school has really taken that and run with it and taken the program to new heights. They've grown the program in our school, and it's been wonderful to be able to take a step back from something you've invested in and watch it continue to grow. And now I'm back to help again.
Sean McComb, National Teacher of the Year in the United States, like becoming Miss America or something, right? You have to like spend a year on tour.
There's a year on tour.
Right?
Yeah. So
what have you been doing for the past year since President Obama handed you that, it's a glass apple,
yeah,
isn't
crystal
it?
Apple.
Crystal
That's
apple.
That's right. Yeah. So the role of the national teacher is to be a representative and spokesperson for the profession. So I'll go to policy forums. I'll have this chance to meet with the Secretary of Education, the chief state school officers from all the different states, to go to teacher conferences and to go to individual schools and speak to teachers and hear from them and talk about the state of education and try to provide some encouragement to teachers who are doing this really challenging work.
What did you hear during this past year from teachers? What made the biggest impression on you?
Well, you know, the biggest impression for me was that there are incredible people doing this work amidst really challenging circumstances across the country. It made me very thankful to be from Maryland, a state that really values educators and education, to be particularly from Baltimore County, a district that's really forward-thinking and thoughtful in their planning. When I'm in places, you know, some other states, Arizona, Kansas, Ohio, where public education as an institution is really under attack, the morale in those places is really challenging. And so to try to provide them some encouragement, but to see what those dedicated teachers do in those circumstances amidst that kind of challenging environment and their dedication to
kids
every day.
Because they really want to be teachers, don't they?
They do. Yeah. And what matters to them is the classroom and the space to do that work and to support kids and to build into their lives. And, you know, I thought I'd be inspiring them. And absolutely, I was the one being inspired by the teachers that I met, given what they face.
How old are you, Sean?
32 years old.
And how did you get to teaching? Is this something that, how did it come to you? I wonder, were you thinking about it when you were a high school student?
Not originally. So I had some difficulties in my childhood, some adversity. My parents divorced when I was young, lived predominantly with my mother, and the disease of alcoholism runs through my family. And after the divorce, that started to really set into my mom. Things got worse and worse. There started to be some emotional abuse at home. Poverty wasn't far behind. I remember sitting up at night wondering when the money would run out for our family. And during that time, you know, my achievement in school starts to slip too. When there are those kind of serious things happening at home, it's really hard to focus when you're in school. And when I was a sophomore, I was recommended to drop down a level from our top tier classes to drop down into kind of our middle tier classes. And during that year, I met Brian Reagan, who was a teacher in an after-school program for audiovisual. And he was just someone who loved to be around teenagers and valued them and made me feel like I had a place that mattered. I could be creative with the projects and make something that went out into the community. And he sort of made me really think that maybe I did have something to offer. And then that was important because at the end of that year, I met Tom Schertz, who was the AP English teacher. And I was not recommended for his class, but all my friends were there, and I didn't want them to know that I had been struggling. So I asked him if he would let me take his class. He said to me, "I'll let you take the class, but here's the deal. You have to give your best effort every single day. And if you do that, I will give you all the support I can, but I refuse to lower my standards for you." And that moment was when I thought, the world's not going to do that either. And so amidst all these challenges at home, I started to see myself differently and work harder than I had before. And based on that interaction and the way they helped me turn my life around and go to college, I thought I want to do this for other people.
The reason you couldn't automatically get into an advanced placement AP class was
because
your
grades
had fallen.
Yeah.
How far had they fallen? Were you getting C's, D's?
C's and D's. It was enough where I thought it wouldn't get me too much attention or trouble, more trouble at home, where I was still passing classes. I didn't want my friends to really catch on. Also, I had a good peer group that I was doing so poorly.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually it did catch up with me.
So you had a couple of teachers that took an interest in you.
That's
right.
You
had the one from the after-school AV program. By the way, you didn't go into television production, right? Video production. And the other who said, yeah, I'll get you in this class under this condition.
Right. The condition that you put in your best effort every single day. Mm. And he said, you know, the world's not going to lower its standards for you. And that was a real wake-up call for me,
right.
You know, that I'm going to have to step up my game. And so I decided to become a teacher. You know, I went to college and I thought, you know, what better way to spend my life than to give to others the gift they had given me? You know, with the poverty of my family, the poor performance I was doing in school, opportunities were closing right before me. And they made a choice to kind of hold the door open and pull me through. And so that was the story of how I chose education.
One of the most depressing comments I've ever heard anybody make, and it is still made, is that if you go into teaching, you're not a very ambitious person, right? You're not going to make a lot of money. You may not be able to support a family, although, you know, salaries are better today and benefits are better than they were when all that started, right? But did you hear any of that along the way, either from family members or other people said, oh, that's nice, you're going to be a teacher, good for you. You know what I mean? That people weren't just sort of shrugged, weren't very excited about it, not as excited as you were.
Sure. Yeah, you know, I hear that a lot. I hear that still when I tell people that I'm a teacher and the kind of beliefs they have around that. But I think, you know, for me, it's about what do we value as a society? Do we value our children in a way that we want our best to go in there? And we need to back that up with a salary that shows that kind of value to attract the right kind of people to the profession.
I agree. But that, you know, it doesn't happen. And you visited states where teacher unions are under attack. And funding for education is being slashed, right?
Yeah, and this is a reality, and this is a challenge. We also have a teacher shortage in this country. We have a teacher shortage, you know, all over this country, and we ask ourselves why, and then we should think about how have we structured this profession to be attractive to get the quality of candidates that we want to be in our schools.
So what are you doing this year, Sean? Are you back at Patapsco?
I am.
Okay, so your tour as National Teacher of the Year is finished.
Correct.
And you're back. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm still doing a few speaking events, but I'm at Patapsco every other day. And on the other day, I'm working with Baltimore County at the district level to help move some of their initiatives forward and be a support for teachers there.
By the way, the personal story that you told about your own family's situation and all, this is something you share with your students.
It is. I just shared it this week. I shared it on the first day of class, actually.
How do you do that? And why do you do that?
The night before the first day of school, I write a letter to my class, to the students. I do that because I am going to ask them to take risks during the year, to be vulnerable. There's a lot of risk in learning. I think people sometimes forget when they get out of school, but there's risk and challenge, and sometimes we fall short of that, and that's hard to do, to take those kind of risks. And so I want to take that personal risk first, share my story with students. And the other thing that comes out of it is that that serves as an invitation sometimes for students to – I ask all the students to write back, and some share their story with me. Out of 50 letters that I responded to the last couple of days, 10 of them featured some kind of parental substance abuse or abandonment. And 5 of them, the child said it was one of the first times that they had shared it with an adult outside of their family. Mm-hmm. And so it builds this trust that I think is so important in learning, the trust and relationship that allows us to really invest into kids. And I do that intentionally because I think that they should really know who I am, why I'm there, why it's so important to me, and why I will care so much that sometimes it's going to be like, you know, I'm pushing them along because I care so much, but that challenge is important. And at the same time, I feel a responsibility because I came through that situation to help other kids who might be challenged that way. Hmm.
The most rewarding aspect of this so far has been seeing those kids in the middle, the ones in the AVID program, actually get to college. Would you say that is it?
Absolutely right. So yeah. These kids that come from the academic middle, first in their family to go to college, and they are able to make that future happen for themselves. And some of them have graduated college and are out in the economy contributing and living comfortable lives. It's been wonderful.
I wanted to ask you this. I was speaking to a longtime educator about how we separate students in schools, right? College-bound, maybe college-bound, kids in the middle, like the AVID group, and then the other kids, you know, go work at Jiffy Lube. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but we don't actually raise the bar and say, you know, consider this. Consider going to college, getting a job in IT. You know, vocational training, some kids just need to have that because we need to have those folks in our workforce. But this teacher was saying the way we separate them out and when we do it, maybe in middle school or something, it all gets sorted out, and there's a sort of a destiny aspect to that we should hold off making these arrangements. We should mix the kids more. It'd be good for all of them if they weren't so separated. What do you think of that?
Well, I think students should always have access and encouragement to take more rigorous classes, to move up into that coursework, to have exposure to the kind of stimuli that is going to really impact them and make them believe in themselves. Every kid should come to school and feel like the adults in this place believe in me and believe that I can achieve to the best of my ability, and even that they're pushing what I believe that ability to be.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's college.
It doesn't. There are great careers that are in the technical fields that we have large openings in that need to be filled. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with those careers. If that's interesting to a student and they can work in that way, then we should open those up.
In the case of the AVID kids, though, they're sort of separated, right, because of their grades?
They come in the middle and they come across those tracks. And so our goal is to help them move from our low-level classes, if they start there, to move up and cross those barriers. And I've seen it happen. The kids just need a little extra support, encouragement, in order to make it happen.
Well, Sean, it's been nice to have you on the show with us today as we spend this hour and next talking to teachers from across Maryland. Sean McComb teaches English at Patapsco High School and Center for the Arts in Dundalk. He was named the 2014 National Teacher of the Year. Good for you, Sean, and good for Baltimore County for having you as a teacher there.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on the
show. Thank you for being with us. We'll take a short break. We'll meet another teacher when we get back, McKinley Broom, an elementary school teacher who's starting at a brand new school that just opened up in Baltimore County out in Owings Mills, the Lyons Mill Elementary School. So McKinley Broom joining us in just for a minute. McKinley Broom's advice to teachers is teach like a pirate. We're going to hear about that when we get back. So welcome back to Midday, meeting some Maryland teachers today on the show as school gets back underway. Now McKinley Broom joining us. McKinley is the 2010 Milken National Educator Award winner from Maryland. We'll hear about that in a second, what that award represents. He's teaching fifth grade at a brand new school in Baltimore County. I don't, if you haven't caught this, folks, in Baltimore County, there's a new elementary school in Owings Mills called Lyons Mill Elementary. And that's, I guess they're still putting the finishing touches on the school, McKinley?
Still getting everything ready to go.
So welcome to the show, by the
way.
Thank you. And thanks for taking time out to be here today.
Yes.
You're on your lunch break or?
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
So Lyons Mill opened, Woodhome Elementary got overcrowded, right? And
yep.
In Baltimore County needed a new elementary school in Owings Mills.
Yes, so Lyons Mill was built to alleviate some of that, and now both schools are a little more manageable, and we can meet the needs of the kids a little better.
So a fifth grade teacher, tell me about your trek to becoming a teacher.
So I'm very fortunate because actually I first started teaching 10 years ago when we opened Woodhome Elementary School. So I started off as a new teacher at a new school with all the...
Woodhome is only 10 years old?
Only 10 years old. Boy. And I got to work there with my wonderful principal, Merrily Clark, and we went from a dirt field to a national Blue Ribbon school in our 10 years there. And then as it got overcrowded, Miss Clark moved on to open Lyons Mill. So I followed her over. So I taught fourth grade 10 years at Woodhome, and now I'm teaching fifth grade at Lyons Mill.
How did you end up as an elementary school teacher? Where did your interest in that start?
I started in high school. In high school, we chose tracks to focus on as we went through those 4 years. And so I chose the education track. And throughout that time, my guidance counselors worked with me on finding schools and money to go to college. And we came across the wonderful Hope Scholarship, which was a big thing, you know, 15 years ago.
Yep.
And that helped pay for my 4 years at Salisbury University. And now I'm here doing great things.
But why? Why did you choose education then? You could have chosen business, chemistry, science, math, psychology, I mean, anything. But why education?
Growing up, I always had good relationship with kids. They tend to always want to navigate towards me, whether it's, you know, babysitting my little cousins or doing something at like a camp or anything like that.
Are you a kid magnet?
That's my nickname.
Really?
That's what my principal calls me. It's exactly what she calls me.
I know guys like you.
Yeah.
So, but so, you like kids.
Yeah. And I love all my teachers that I've had growing up, but I always felt like there was always more that kids could do. And so the whole idea that we use now with the student-centered approach and putting kids in charge and giving them more responsibilities, I enjoy putting my kids in those situations because to me it seems like when I work with kids, they naturally want to be leaders. They feel like they're leaders. They might be empowered at home, but they don't know how to do it the right way. So I take pride in, you know, we do a class government. We'll do different things in our school. Maybe with fifth graders right now, we're working with third graders to get them ready to be successful in a new school. And so being able to put kids in a situation to be a leader in a positive and respectful way, I think it'll be real valuable.
That's interesting. What's the breakdown male-female teachers at the elementary level in your experience, the 10 years at Woodhome and now?
Okay, so my 10 years at Woodhome, we might have had at the most maybe 3 or 4 male teachers. Miss Clark, my principal, was very smart when we opened up Lyons Mill. I believe we have 13 male teachers at Lyons Mill.
In K through 5.
Hmm. And I can, so far, it's making a huge difference with those kids.
How so? Tell us about that.
When I first started teaching, I would work with kids, and when they would, so I always switch with another class. When they would go to the other teacher for reading or whatever the subject is, they come back, and I'd be like, well, you know, why are you giving this teacher a hard time, and you're not giving me a hard time? And one of the young boys made a good point, and he said, well, all night at home and on the weekends, my mom is always getting on me about something. When I come to school, my female teacher is getting on me about something. And it's, they just feel a sense of relief knowing that because they're not the most perfect kids and they know they're going to be nagged on every now and then, at least it's coming from a different perspective, a guy's perspective. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the boys tend to navigate that a little bit more because now they know they can work more and focus on being a man and growing to be a man as opposed to following directions and unwillingly trying to do what they're supposed to do.
So what is your advice to that young man, young boy, about the other teacher?
Building relationships. how do you feel about the other teacher? What are you and the other teacher doing to make sure you're both going to be successful this year? Do you need to spend more time with that teacher? Maybe you want to ask to have lunch with that teacher so she can get to know you better. So I think sometimes when kids struggle, they struggle because the teachers and the kids don't have a strong relationship. And I've been fortunate enough to win awards, and I appreciate that, but I never considered myself to be a great teacher, because I believe if kids can relate to me, they're going to work hard for me regardless. So you don't have to be the best teacher. You just got to build a strong relationship. And then when, like, testing and other big events come around, they're going to want to work hard because they don't want to let me down.
Right. They want to please you.
Exactly.
So I glossed over that quickly. The 2010 Milken National Educator Award for McKinley Broom. Do you mind telling us what that award's about?
Sure. So Milken is... it's similar to Teacher of the Year, except for it's more of a secretive process. So principals and other leaders in the school will submit your name and information about you to a bank of, information that the state will hold on to. And so the Milken family, which is based out of California, will then go to each state, read biographies about different teachers, and their goal is to try to recognize the unsung heroes, the teachers that do a good job but aren't necessarily in the spotlight all the time. And so they, once they decide on the winners in each state, they then go to your school, they have a big assembly, they get all the kids worked up and excited, they let them know that there's one teacher in your building that's going to win $25,000, and the kids are all trying to figure out who that teacher is.
Oh, I see.
And then they finally open the envelope, and in 2010, I was able to represent Maryland as a Milken educator.
That sounds like fun. McKinley Broom is our guest in this segment of the show, who teaches at a brand new Lyons Mill Elementary School in Baltimore County, fifth grade teacher. Focusing on science, math, and health, right?
Yes.
Elementary school. You like kids at this age? Have you thought about becoming maybe a high school teacher? Did you have a choice along the way?
I believe I did have a choice. My focus was elementary education. I just recently finished my master's in middle school math and science. As I've been teaching fourth grade these last 10 years, I'm more interested in getting into older grades in the future, but I think the challenges of elementary school and being a male teacher in elementary school serves a purpose. And so I enjoy playing that role in the elementary school just so they can go on and excel even more.
What is your general perception of parents when it comes to their relationship with schools and education, the messages they send their kids about learning? What would you say generally, or however you want to answer that question? I'm curious about parent involvement, parent interest in students.
I think there's a direct correlation between parent involvement and student success. Now, there will be students who are outliers. Me personally, I didn't have much parent involvement when I was growing up, but I was always determined to do my best. So there will be some students who will go on without their parents. But in my 10 years, my best parents have created some of my best students, and I've always appreciated parent support. I think there are things that teachers need to do to create parent involvement. We can't expect for it to happen right away. We need to do different things. I know one of my goals this year is to have quarterly meetings with parents to explain what's going on in the quarter. I also hope to teach my parents the exact same way I teach my students. So when it comes to small group and rotations, I want my parents to see how that works in the classroom so they know how much time the students give with me, how much time they get on their own, what they're expected to do while they're on their own. And I think the more you can fill in a parent on what their child is going through in school, the more the parent can then relate to the child, which hopefully increases the conversation at home. And again, that's another goal too. You want your kids to be excited about school. And I remember one year, the parents were so annoyed with me at a point because my name kept coming up at home all the time that they
were talking about you at home.
It was no weekends. They couldn't mention Mr. Broom on the weekends because it was happening too much. And I was like, that is awesome that, you know, they're that excited about school.
So the kids were coming home and talking about what they did in school today in Mr. Broom's class.
Exactly.
And it made the parents feel sort of self-conscious that they weren't the center of attention?
And then they start to realize how they can get more involved, so it becomes more of a partnership. Yes.
Because I was going to ask you, when I asked about parent involvement, I was wondering, in 10 years of teaching at the elementary level, there's a lot of kids, and I wonder, what would you say, can you estimate the number of parents who actually, you would say, an active, interested parent versus one who's just sort of handing their kids off to us?
Okay, so my data is kind of skewed because I've always taught in advanced class. And typically those parents, I'm, you know, around 90% participation. Everything's pretty good.
Okay.
When I teach my average class or maybe a struggling class, there are many parents that still try every single day to make sure the kid's successful. But there are some that, honestly, maybe they struggle while they were in school, or they're just not used to or comfortable with, you know, being that active in school. They believe that the teacher's job is to, you know, to do the school part and their job is at home. And so as long as we can find ways to get the parents involved in a unthreatening, friendly way, they tend to be more receptive and they will step into the school more often.
Do you think your role in by the way, Lions Mill Elementary is mostly African-American students?
Yes.
Do you think your role as, you know, male role model, you sound like you gladly accept that, you might inspire other young men to get into teaching at that level?
I think that would be awesome if I could.
I mean, is that one of the things you think about?
Whenever any student wants to, I'm definitely there to support them. The struggle that I have at elementary age is most kids don't know what they want to do.
Oh, sure.
I'm fortunate, though, because I keep good relationships with most of my students. And so they are doing different things. One of my students who just started their first year at the University of Alabama sent me an email last weekend, let me know how things were going, and encouraging me because she knew I changed schools. And she, you know, telling me, you know, she trusts that I'll still do a great job no matter where I go, kind of thing. And then and she's going to look into education also. And so when she comes back home for breaks, she'll gladly come into my classroom to get some experience and see how things are going. And so I think as you continue to build relationships, which is my goal as a teacher, when they do want to choose their career field, if I can support them in any way, I put my kids in a situation where they feel comfortable to still come back to me and use me as a resource.
That's great. You talked about having good relationship with students. You say, I don't think I'm that good of a teacher. I think I'm good at building relationships with students, and then they want to respond and study hard and work hard for me. So when it comes to the tests, I want to ask you about teaching for the test, that phrase, teaching for the test, that keeps coming up every time we have a chance to ask a teacher this question.
Uh-huh.
I don't pass it up.
Okay.
What about that? Because, I mean, you must hear that sometimes when you tell people you're a teacher and they say, gee, that's tough these days, isn't it? You're always teaching for the test. Do you feel that? First of all, do you feel that way? Do you think it's true? And what about it?
So part of when we opened up Woodhome, one of the benefits that we had was when you open up a school year, a brand new school, that first year, your test scores don't count. So our principal allowed us to go ahead and teach the way we felt comfortable. And then we would let the test scores decide if we needed to change anything. Hmm. And so during that first year, I was able to do what I think every teacher needs to do, and that's remember why you became a teacher. Don't forget that, because when you forget that, you end up not believing in what you're doing. And so I was able to teach the way I thought kids would learn the best, putting them in charge, putting them in situations where they had to respond. And our test scores were excellent. And so because of that, I didn't have to change. So when it comes to preparing for a test, years ago when we did MSA, we would try to teach to the test, and you realize after a while that you're just forcing the kids to memorize things, and they can't apply what they know. And so now with Park, it's more teach what they need, and if you're teaching the kids to be thinkers, and that's my one class rule, you got to be able to think. If you teach kids to be thinkers, they can apply themselves to any situation, and good results usually happen.
That's good. I mean, that's what I've heard about the new Park testing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good to hear that. And what would you say, McKinley Broom, has been your most, do you have a number one single most rewarding experience from your years in teaching so far? What would you say?
I would say the last couple of weeks of last school year when I was at Woodhome, word got around the neighborhood that I was leaving my school. And it was amazing how many of my former students and their parents would come to school in May and June to visit me, to say goodbye, you know, and wishing me good luck where I was going next. And I love it. And I'm so used to kids always visit me often, but I was about maybe 20 or 30 kids and families that came to visit that last week. And that was very honoring as a teacher.
I should say so. That is great to hear. Well, thank you for being with us on your lunch hour today.
No problem at all.
McKinley Broom from Lions Mill Elementary School in Baltimore County, another teacher at Baltimore County, lucky to have. And you have a chess club.
Yes, chess club.
In fifth grade?
In fifth grade.
That's great.
All about thinking, teaching people how to
think.
The rule.
Way to go. Well, thank you, McKinley.
I appreciate it.
Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
Please enjoy some pizza from Joe Squared Pizza.
I sure will.
They provide lunch for us on Fridays. Midday's special program, 2 hours devoted to teachers today on our show. So please stay with us, folks. We're going to take another break here. When we get back, we'll meet another teacher, this one from visiting us from Carroll County. Nicole Heinlein will be with us at the 2014 Carroll County Teacher of the Year. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. As we talk to teachers today on our program, now Nicole Heinlein is with us. She's a third grade teacher at Carrolltown Elementary School in Carroll County. She was the 2014 Carroll County Teacher of the Year. Nice to have you on the show, Nicole.
Thank you.
Taking time out from school to be with us today. Is we okay now? Okay.
Okay.
So, Nicole, I guess I start off by wondering, you know, the trek to becoming a teacher. Mm-hmm. Is it something you thought about when you were in high school? Is something you had something else in mind and you got to college and you thought, well, no, maybe I want to be a teacher. Yeah. I always just wonder why.
Yeah, well, see, I've always enjoyed working with children. I had always liked babysitting and things like that when I was in high school, but it was something I never really considered as a profession. And so when I went to college, I actually worked on a degree in political science and Latin American studies.
Huh.
And throughout college, I, you know, continued to work with children, but kind of as an extra activity. I worked at our local Head Start. I was the volunteer coordinator for them. I coordinated a lot of different events on campus for young children and things like that. And it was just kind of a hobby. And I had intended to go to law school. And at our graduation, I kind of was still undecided about what I wanted to do. And I saw a former professor who had been my history teacher for, you know, a simple, basic U.S. history class. And he used to bring his kid to campus for different events that I would coordinate. And
Where was this, by the way?
Oh, Juniata College in Huntington, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Yep. And when he saw me at graduation, he said, "Did you get a teaching job yet, Nicole?" And I said, "Oh, I don't. I'm not a teacher. I'm not an education major." And he said, "Oh, well, that's really a shame because I've seen you do a lot for kids of this community." And it just kind of got the wheels turning at that point. So I ended up taking a job where I was a buyer for a lumber company. And I went back to school and I earned my master's degree.
What did you buy? Did you go around, you know, to sawmills? And
no, I actually I bought windows.
You bought windows?
Yeah, it was the 84 Lumber Company. I bought windows and I got to travel a lot.
You needed a job.
Yes, I needed a job. And so I worked there for a little while I kind of went to school and became a teacher. And I'm really happy that I made that choice.
So you remember what this professor said?
Yes.
I mean, that obviously made an impression on you.
Yes, it did.
Do you think teachers encourage people to become teachers enough?
No. And I think that's part of what my problem was. Even though I had always respected teachers that I had in high school, I never really thought of it as something that could be my profession. I got pretty good grades in high school. I did pretty well. And people always kind of said to me, "Oh, you need to be a doctor. You need to be a lawyer. You need to be one of these professions that we kind of look at as the respected and big professions."
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that teachers right up there with that, but I don't think that as a society we always treat it that way. And it really should be treated that way because we're influencing the youth that's going to shape our country one day. So
that's very interesting you say that. Yeah. I wonder if others in our audience have had that experience or those thoughts because I remember senior year high school. I have to go back further than you do to remember that. But I remember we had quite a bright class, 41 members of the National Honor Society, mm-hmm. And this is a pretty small high school. Mm-hmm. And I remember a teacher who we respected and liked a lot expressing disappointment that there wasn't more ambition in the class for a lot of us were first generation going to college.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, we weren't going to better colleges. We didn't set the bar high enough. And no one seemed to be interested in those careers that you're talking about, except mm-hmm. a couple of kids. One wanted to be a doctor, one wanted to be a lawyer. But a lot of the women in my class, young women, were interested in becoming teachers. And I don't think he thought that was such a great idea back then.
Yeah, it's a shame. It really is. I've heard college professors discourage some people from becoming teachers or guidance counselors, saying, oh, you're too smart to do that. And I think that's really a shame. I had a little boy visit my class yesterday for our open house that we had. And he was very surprised to see that I would be teaching all of the subjects this year. I teach elementary school, but we departmentalize, which means that some teachers teach some subjects and some teach others. And this year I'm teaching everything. And he was very surprised because last year I taught just math. And he said, well, you know how to teach reading too? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And I said, I'm very smart. I'm a very good teacher. But I don't think that as teachers we allow ourselves to build ourselves up or show that we are smart or that we are capable or that, you know, we're professionals. And so I start that off right from the beginning with the kids at a very young age. I let them know that I'm a good teacher. And I think that that's okay and what we need to do to promote the profession. So,
what's your best quality as a teacher?
Oh, goodness.
What do you think? I mean, evaluate yourself here. Let's do
oh,
a little Nicole Heinlein self-evaluation.
I feel like I'm interviewing here.
Yeah.
Okay. For a job.
I mean, what would you say? I mean, is it patience? Is it...
It's not patience, no.
You're a good... What would you say it is? You're a good communicator?
What? You know what? I think it is just that I'm a positive person. And it sounds, you know, very sunshiny type of thing. But... you know, and this is one of the things I tell my students on the first day of school. We have lots of rules in our school, but I have two very specific rules in my classroom. And one of them is that you maintain a positive attitude because you can't do anything or accomplish anything without that. And so the other rule is that you always do your best. And that's just it. And those are my two very simple rules, because if we take care of those two things, then everything else will be smooth sailing. And that's what I hold myself accountable for that as well, and I let the students know that too.
So during the course of the year, you get a student who, this is third grade, right?
Yeah, third grade.
Okay, third grade, there can be some emotional issues in third grade. you know, you get a boy or a girl who's really struggling maybe with what, math?
Yeah.
Or
often, yeah.
Reading even. So... during the course of the year, how do you measure? I guess I'm wondering, how do you measure the success of a year? You look at the kids are the biggest problems, the most struggles, and where they are at the end of the year? Is it as simple as that?
For me, I look at every single child and if they have grown during that year. Third grade's a really interesting year because it's kind of the year where children developmentally go from being this little kid to this big kid. And we really go from learning about learning to where we actually use the skills that we have learned to learn more information. So it can be a struggle. So for me, every single year, I'm trying to make sure that every single student grows. And I always have a variety. I have my strugglers, and I want them to grow. But I also have some kids that come in, and they're at the tippy top. They're already ahead of the game. I don't want them to remain stagnant. I want everyone to be challenged, and I really try to make sure that everyone has grown over the course of the year.
Boy.
So, yeah.
It must be tough, though, when you have to adjust for all these different levels of achievement so far, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Yeah. Hmm. We differentiate.
How many students would you say you have in a class?
This year, I'm going to have 26 kids in my class. Yeah.
That sounds like a lot to me.
It's a little bit
more
than
what would you prefer,
usual.
18 or 19?
Yeah, and, you know, there's such a thing as too few students in a class as well. But, you know, that 20 number is kind of nice. But 26 is definitely something that's manageable.
Is 26 the high number for you in your experiences in Carroll County?
No, I've had this number of students before. Like 3 years ago, I actually had exactly 26 as well. And that was actually one of the best classes I've ever had. So, you know, it's nice to have a variety of students in the class. It keeps the conversation lively. It allows for some of those students who might be strugglers to hear some of the higher level conversations that some of their peers can have. It just, you know, keeps everyone more accountable and helps us all grow.
Nicole, if you don't mind, because it calls for, again, for you to talk about yourself.
Oh, boy.
why were you named Teacher of the Year in 2014? Was it for a specific project that you undertook with the students? Or
No, not really. Through the process, you know, they kind of look at you as a whole teacher, but I think certainly some of the ways that I handle things in my classroom led toward that. I'm a teacher who really believes a lot in problem-based learning and project-based learning, where students have the opportunity to learn through, you know, being active with what they're doing. You know, let's, instead of just study things about a flood, let's actually build some dams that will allow us to prevent a flood.
Solve a problem.
Yeah, because what I've found is I'm preparing these students for a world that I know absolutely nothing about, because by the time these kids graduate, there are going to be jobs out there that don't even exist today. And to me as a teacher, that's really kind of frightening, because I want to make sure they're prepared. So rather than teaching them what they need to know, I try to make sure I give them some skills that they can take forward with them that can be applied in a variety of contexts, so that they can really tackle any problem that they encounter in the future.
Give us an example of where you saw that in, say, a project that you developed with the kids where they solved a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Was it the flood? Did you do something like that?
That's something that I'm planning to do.
Planning this year?
Yeah, but last year I worked with my students. We were talking about waste in our school cafeteria, and the kids, you know, kind of noticed that there was a lot of waste, and we were studying different environmental issues. So one day we actually just saved all of our trash from the cafeteria, food, everything. Thank goodness it wasn't scrambled egg day, because that would have been very gross.
Did they bring it to the classroom?
Well, we stayed in the cafeteria and we kind of sorted it into piles. The kids decided where they felt everything belonged, and we ended up with, you know, recyclables and food waste and things like that. And they weighed the waste to see how much there was, and we were surprised. And then they took the data and extrapolated it. So they figured out, if this is kind of standard in third grade, what would it be for the whole school? What would it be for our entire county? How many schools are there in Maryland? What would it be for Maryland? This is terrible. And they had a good solution for the recyclables. Let's start to recycle them. That will really help. But they weren't sure what to do with the food. So they researched some options, and they found out that they could compost food waste. And so we started composting in our classroom. And they came up with different recipes for their compost and how much water they would add. And
you had a compost bin in the classroom?
They had individual ones so that they could try these different compost recipes, I guess, and be able to see which would actually decompose at the fastest rate, so that we could get the soil out to our garden with flowers.
Did it affect the atmosphere in the classroom?
No, it was actually pretty good. We had them in little like Rubbermaid containers, so it sealed the smell away from
everything. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
So, great. And is there recycling? I'm just curious. Was there recycling in the school?
Yes, there was, but a lot of kids weren't putting their items in the recycling bin. Yeah, and so that was a simple change for them. They solved it right away, but they didn't know what to do with the food. They weren't sure, so they had to research.
So there's an environmental lesson in that. Mm-hmm. There's a civics lesson in that, mm-hmm. civic engagement, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was a writing lesson involved because they—
So do you do this on your own?
Well, I do it with the help of a lot of really good curriculum writers. We have great curriculum writing teams in Carroll County who give us beautiful lessons to work with. But also, we're treated as professionals, which is really nice, and given some freedom. If this isn't working for my class, I can come up with my own ideas. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can adjust. And that's really nice, because not every class is the same.
By the way, one last question, because mm-hmm. I asked our previous guest, McKinley Broom, the same question about teaching for the test, that phrase.
Yeah.
Do you feel that pressure still, even with the new testing that's done in Maryland?
I do feel that pressure sometimes, but it's something that I definitely fight against, because I think that teaching in the way that I do, with the problem-based learning and the project-based learning, what I'm doing is I'm equipping students with knowledge, but they don't necessarily always, they're able to apply that knowledge to a variety of contexts because of the way that I teach. I don't know what's going to come at them on that test, but because of the fact that I have taught them in that way, by the time they get to that test, we're all set to go. You know, we have a ways to go. We really do, but we will get there.
Nicole, thank you very much for
being
with us today. Nicole Heinlein was the 2014 Carroll County Teacher of the Year, the 2015 Carroll County Teacher of the Year. Your successor is Rachel McCusker.
Yes, right? She is wonderful. She's a music teacher, elementary music.
Thank you for being here, Nicole, and have a great school year.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Enjoy some pizza, will you?
All right, I will.
Joe Squid Pizza for lunch today here for all our midday guests. We're going to take a break, and then we'll get the NPR news. Then we'll have a second hour of the show where we speak to Maryland teachers about the new school year, about their careers. So please stay with us. Our midday back-to-school special continues in just a few minutes.